I arrived for my first EMDR training in need of some trauma processing myself. A few weeks earlier, the Jesuit priest who was chair of my department at Massachusetts General Hospital had suddenly shut down the trauma clinic, leaving us scrambling for a new site and new funds to treat our patients, train our students, and conduct our research. At around the same time, my friend Frank Putnam, who was doing the long-term study of sexually abused girls that I discussed in Chapter 10, was fired from the National Institutes of Health. And Rick Kluft, the country's foremost expert on dissociation, lost his unit at the Institute of the Pennsylvania Hospital. It might have all been a coincidence, but it felt as if my whole world was under attack. My distress about the trauma clinic seemed like a good test for my EMDR trial. While I was following my partner's fingers with my eyes, a rapid succession of fuzzy childhood scenes came to mind. Intense family dinner table conversations, confrontations with schoolmates during recess, throwing pebbles at a shed window with my older brother. All of them, the sort of vivid, floating, hypnopompic images we experience when we slumber late on a Sunday morning, then forget the moment we fully awaken. After about half an hour, my fellow trainee and I revisited the scene in which my boss told me that he was closing my clinic. Now I felt resigned. Okay, it happened, and now it's time to move on. I never looked back. The clinic later reconstituted itself and has thrived ever since. Was EMDR the sole reason I was able to let go of my anger and distress? Of course, I'll never know for certain, but my mental journey, through unrelated childhood scenes to putting the episode to rest, was unlike anything I had experienced in talk therapy. What happened next, when it was my turn to administer EMDR, was even more intriguing. We rotated to a different group, and my new fellow student, whom I'd never met before, told me he wanted to address some painful childhood incidents involving his father, but he did not want to discuss them. I had never worked on anybody's trauma without knowing the story, and I was annoyed and flustered by his refusal to share any details. While I was moving my fingers in front of his eyes, he looked intensely distressed. He began sobbing, and his breathing became rapid and shallow. But each time I asked him the questions that the protocol called for, he refused to tell me what came to his mind. At the end of our 45-minute session, the first thing my colleague said was that he'd found dealing with me so unpleasant that he would never refer a patient to me. Otherwise, he remarked, the EMDR session had resolved the matter of his father's abuse.